Hey, everybody, this is Jimmy. Welcome to another episode of our show. The best thing for me doing this show is I get to be reacquainted with friends and fellow comics and people I've worked with over the years and meet a lot of new folks as well. Well, today we're being reacquainted with my buddy Paula Poundstone. This is her third time on the Jimmy Tingle Show. I'm thrilled to have her. Everybody knows her. Everybody loves her. She has an awesome podcast. It's the name of which is Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, but I am here to verify that that is not true. That is not true. You can get it at paulapoundstone.com. It's one of the funniest 2 hours you'll ever spend listening to her and her friends banter, especially her crack manager and co-host, Bonnie. Bonnie Byrne is amazing. And Bonnie has her own segment about how to do management. I have to listen to that one, Paula. But first of all, please welcome Paula Poundstone to the show. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Tingle. How are you?
I'm great. Great to see you again. Thanks again for making time for us.
Nice to see you. You know, I wanted to tell you. Yep. Okay. All right. So, listeners, during the stay-at-home order, Jimmy Tingle kindly invited me to do some, like, you know, Zoom, you know, online shows with him. We were all scrambling to figure out what to do. And we did them with Barney Frank. And Barney, being an older gentleman, I think is part of the reason. I mean, his husband would do the tech stuff for him. And, you know, I mean, most people are familiar with stuff like Zoom now as a result of the stay-at-home order. But keep in mind, none of us had any idea how to do that back then. And Barney did not make himself responsible for knowing how to do stuff like that. He just passed it off to his husband. And what room was he sitting in? Was it his office, I think?
I think it was the hallway. I think it was at the hall into his office.
Okay. And I don't know if you all remember, like, this is something that comics know a lot about now, which is struggling with your background.
Yeah.
You know what, right? But again, Barney didn't struggle with his background.
No.
Barney didn't care at all about his background. And he also did that thing where, and again, a lot of people still do this, which is they still don't make the camera level with their head. And so you were just looking up Barney Frank's nose while he was recording. And finally, Tingle said to him one day after we finished taping, he said, Bonnie, you got to get rid of that suitcase behind your head. So I want you to know that I can't remember when that was. Last summer, maybe?
No, it was 2020, working, I think.
Well, no. Maybe last summer. I was working in Maine.
Oh, okay.
And Barney came to see me. And I hung out with him for a little while after the show. And he said, I want you to know, I moved the suitcase. He was very proud of himself.
Excellent. Those were fun shows, Paula. One thing about being on, I mean, the pandemic, the only bright side of it was we got to do a lot of shows, get reacquainted with a lot of people. And you and I and Bonnie did a bunch of fundraisers in 2020. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was really fun. Oh, yeah. I remember. I remember when I used to in the beginning, when as a performer, when the whole idea of doing like Zoom shows first surfaced, and it's not an easy trick, but I did back then go to the trouble of slapping on some lipstick, maybe fixing my hair, and at least putting on a shirt and tie, regardless of what I had, you know, maybe with shorts,
right,
didn't
right.
matter because you were just, but now, as you can see, I don't even go to that much trouble.
That's what happened.
I finally was just like, yeah. This is the real
yeah.
me. This is how I usually
That's
look.
That's good.
And, you know, for me, a mirror isn't to fix my hair. It's to accept it.
Accept it with love.
Yeah, yeah. To just, you know, the truth is if another performer had the same, you know, like if Billie Eilish or, you know, or Lady Gaga or somebody, you know, somebody else, wore the clothes that I did, then everybody would want to. If Taylor Swift took on my look, then everyone would be after it. It's only not good because I have it.
Right. Well, you know what? With the highlight of that First of all, 2020 election was great, doing those fundraisers and helping the team with that and with Barney. But the Barry Cremins, the Ding Ho 40th reunion was a blast. When we had 27 or 28 comics, all over 60 years old. Many of them new to Zoom for the first week, you know, first week or two in. And that was a blast. That was a tribute to Barry Cremins, 40th anniversary for the Ding Ho, and a fundraiser for his wife, Helen, who was ill at the time. And but that was a blast.
I hadn't seen any of those guys in, you know, at least 30 years.
Yeah.
That really was fun.
Yeah. With Lenny Clark.
I'm not usually, okay. Like when you do a show, like a Zoom show or something, and they go like, oh, and we'll have the chat open for the audience. I always say to people, well, why would you do that? Because what that means is they're no longer listening to the show because they're busy typing. That's just a stupid idea. Yeah. That's like giving old people candy just before they go into the theater. Just don't do it. But I have to confess that because there were so many of us, I did take to the chat at a certain point that night. And I was delighting myself mostly with a running commentary on the whole.
Well,
event.
I saw some of the commentary, and they were dragging me over the coals, Paula. Can you believe it? They were dragging young Jim Tingle over the coals.
Who did?
Oh, there was just some funny comments in it, but that was a great. Oh, we had Stephen Wright and Bobby Goldthwait, Paula Poundstone, Dennis Leary, Lenny Clark. Who else did we have? We had like 25. Tony V, Mike McDonald. It was just a blast to see everybody and get and be reacquainted again.
We the guy who used to make the cocktails behind the bar. You know, I have a theory about Massachusetts, which is where I'm from. I'm from Sudbury, Massachusetts. But I was raised by Southerners. And the thing about a New England accent is it's a little bit like a tornado. It hits some houses and it doesn't hit others. And there's really no explanation for why that is. I do, you know, like we had neighbors that had a kid named Mark. And the mom, you know, because back then people just stuck their head out the front door and yelled for your kid, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Mrs. Farrell would stick her head out the door and go, Mac! And I've just long had I feel that if you can't pronounce a name, you shouldn't be able to name your kid that. Is that too much government intrusion? I don't know. Mac! It's time for supper!
Hilarious. And you know, we're so used to it. We don't even, I mean, I'm sure growing up, saying, oh, that sounded normal. But then you move away and you go someplace else and everybody goes, man, you got a thick accent.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's just, you know, and then when you come back, you really hear it and you really notice it on people.
Hey,
but growing
up,
it's like you don't notice it at all.
What's up with Ben Affleck's Dunkin' Donut commercials? So I knew Ben years ago, but he didn't have that thick a Boston accent then. What did he bring back? Just for the Dunkin' Donut commercials? Did he like?
Definitely.
Yeah. Those are funny commercials, I have to say.
It's a funny one. The best, though, I think, is the my cousin from Boston. Have you seen those Sam Adams commercials?
Yes.
My cousin from Boston. Hilarious.
Yes. Okay. Remember when there was like a trend in television and movies to have the story set in Boston? And so you would have things like Sean Penn doing a Boston accent, which is just not,
right.
Then again, this might be too much government intrusion, but there's got to be a law. Just shouldn't be done. Yeah. Well, and probably
so much,
probably there will
so
be a law
here.
Soon. What?
Yeah, but there's so much talent here. You don't have to go out and get somebody. There's lots of actors here that can do the accent properly and don't have to embellish it. They can just do it.
Yeah.
I know that definitely Affleck was embellishing it and all those guys. But that was a great commercial.
Yeah. No, they're very funny. I keep and by the way, I have Dunkin' Donuts. Okay, this is like so I live in Santa Monica, California, and I have for I don't know, 30 something years now, and you know, it's a town, it's a small city, in Southern California. We've experienced things before here. They actually had the nerve to open up a Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, we had in California, there's a Winchell's Donuts. It's fine. I mean, it's not Dunkin' Donuts, but it's a donut place. It's fine. And what's the other one? Krispy Kreme. It's fine. But they opened up a Dunkin' Donuts. And here's the embarrassing part. When it opened, television news crews went to the opening. And there were lines around the block. I mean, that's just embarrassing.
You're kidding me.
No. It's like we had
lines around the block?
It's like Santa Monicans had never tasted a donut before. It was, you know, it was as if an alien capsule had, been driven through the pavement on Wilshire Boulevard. Yeah, it was very embarrassing.
You have Starbucks?
We do. We have Starbucks. we have cars and light bulbs. I mean, we have all sorts of modern things. I have no idea why they reacted that way to it, but I refuse to go to that Dunkin' Donuts. I feel you have to go to the ones in Boston, and anything outside of that, just you'd be 1,000 pounds, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
You know, because if it's a treat that I have when I'm in Boston, well, all well and good. I go on vacation every summer in Manchester, Massachusetts for a week. Between Logan Airport and Manchester, Massachusetts, which I don't know how many miles that is as the crow flies, but I don't know. It's maybe a 45-minute drive, right? There are 12 Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
And if I were to go off, a little bit, like if I had to, say they're police blocked, part of 128 and I had to get off of it, there would probably be more Dunkin' Donuts just off the ramp somewhere that I'm not familiar with. But the ones that I can see with my eyes from the road going from Logan Airport to Manchester, Massachusetts, 12.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. See, if Jesus had been born now and there was no room at the inn, there'd be no problem. He could go to Dunkin'.
So, yeah. Paula, I have to ask you, did you do a revamp of the website?
Probably.
It looks all spiffed up. It looks new to me.
Oh, no, that's your contact lenses.
Are you sure?
Yeah, they have a new
it
kind
looks
of contact.
Great.
I don't know, maybe.
It looks great. You got a lot of stuff up there.
Well, thank you. You tell yourself it's all going to make such a big difference. I'll tell you, we have in the course, my manager, Bonnie Burns, who she probably drinks too much coffee and she just gets these ideas that she's driven by and she'll come up with something like, if we had a website for the podcast, that could make all the difference. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't. But we always end up hiring these tech, what do you call them? Like kind of, internet techie people.
Web designers.
Yes, exactly. Yep. And I'll tell you what they're good at is telling you how great it would be to have them.
Yeah, exactly.
But once they're up and running, oh boy, they're, you know what? A lot of the drugs that get done in this country are being done by those guys. We've had guys that just disappeared after we paid them. I don't know. That alone just seems like such a, so if there's people out there, if you have any listeners, and I'm sure you don't have listeners that fall into this category, but if you have any listeners that are feeling kind of desperate and were thinking of maybe knocking over a bank, don't do that. Just become one of those web designer guys. You'll be fine.
Yeah, they're doing well. Paula, I love the website. All your dates are up there. But the big date that we want to plug and we want everybody to know about it and tell all your friends in New York City, Town Hall. Town Hall, April 19th, Paula Poundstone Live. Town Hall. Now tell your friends in New York, because, if you haven't seen Paula live, she's wonderful on Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's awesome on the podcast. She's great just bantering like this. But when you see her live, I mean, it's pretty amazing, Paula. And I
know you got tons
of material, but you also do a lot of stuff with the audience in the moment that night. Will you be doing that at Town Hall?
Can't help it.
Yeah, right.
You know what? Right? It's the fun part. I remember when you and I started out at the Ding Ho in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in Inman Square. Especially on like an open mic night, I started in 79. In fact, they hadn't even started having open mic nights yet in 79. They had a handful of comics that were the comics. And if you had the way the Boston shows ran was different than the rest of the country. The way they ran the shows in the rest of the country was there was an MC, and that was the lowest guy on the totem pole. And there was a middle act who did maybe, 30 minutes. And then there was a headliner that did 45. And so the headliner's name was, in more impressive sized chalk letters on the sandwich board.
Bigger magic marker letters,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Was in the block font. But in Boston, when they started out, when the two guys who started the Comedy Connection there, they did, I guess, an advertisement in the paper to get, people to come and say that they were comics. I don't know who decides that you are. Yeah, it's sort of a strange process. But nobody had more than a couple of minutes of material, really. Nobody had more than 5 minutes of material. So they would do shows that had, five, six guys? And the MC was sort of the star of the night because they went on so many times in between the performers. The point being that the lineup was big and the time on stage was small. So when I would do shows, because I decided I was a comic, when I would do shows, there were all these other people waiting to go on, and I would be told how many minutes, and I would memorize my set. I was going to do my 5 minutes. During the day, I was bussing tables for a living, and if you looked closely, you could see that my lips were moving because I was memorizing my 5 minutes. I would go over it and over it and over it, and then I would get on stage and get so nervous that I would forget everything that I meant to do. And now I would be forced to say, talk to somebody in the audience. And that's sort of how that whole thing began. Not that I'm the first person who's ever talked to anybody in the audience. I'm not. But I would.
But you did it out of desperation.
I did do it out of desperation. Yes, you could see the clammy, the sweat coming down my face and the pale, and me grabbing for a soda to restore myself. And at first I felt like this was a really bad thing to do. This was some mark. I used to tell myself that it was unprofessional, which is kind of funny looking back because at what point did I become a professional? I'm not sure that I was. At some point when I was reflecting on how things were going over time, and this happened over and over again, and then, by the way, all the other comics waiting to get on, because now I didn't know what 5 minutes was, because I didn't know where I was in, even if I could remember some of what I meant to say. Well, I have no idea how much time had already passed. So I could hear the knives sharpening in the back of the other comics that were going to disembowel me when I came off stage. And so often I went really long because I was hiding on stage to protect myself from the angry comics. But anyways, that's sort of how that began. And then when I was sort of reflecting on, how things were going, it dawned on me one day, because I kept telling myself not to do that. And it dawned on me one day that was really where the heart of the whole thing was. That usually, just the conversations that you have, nothing terribly deep. I do the time-honored, where are you from? What do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails.
And Paula, you develop a lot of material that way, talking to them off the top of your head, right?
Yeah, although I have to say, You know, I had these managers years ago before I had the great Bonnie Burns. I had these managers, and we all, okay, do you remember, Tingle, that we all carried around our tape recorders?
Yeah.
Because the idea was you were going to tape your set because you were going to learn so much from it.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you know, I could not stand listening to myself, for one thing. Usually if I pushed the play button to listen to myself, and it was sort of like dusting, you really had to get it up and threaten yourself to even make yourself do the task of listening. But I would listen to the tape and I would fall asleep like that. Just because I so hate listening to myself. Like all the wiring in my brain would just shut off. Every time I tried, I would fall asleep again. I'm like, okay, this is not so productive.
Most people can't stand it.
But the idea was that you were going to learn. You were going to learn your mistakes, and you were going to discover like the stuff that you said, in an impromptu fashion. You'd write it down, and then you'd repeat it some other time. That's never worked for me. Somehow when I would try to take something that I had done one night in conversation with somebody, and then I would try to wedge it in, it just never worked. So I gave up on that. Instead, I just have confidence that if I talk to anybody for a few minutes, and first of all, you find out they're mad as a hatter. And second of all, stuff just flows. It's just a matter of keeping the, of keeping the system running more than clogging it up by trying to remember. And in terms of learning by noticing what I do wrong, guess what? I'm real familiar with what I do wrong. I don't really need a tutorial in how badly I suck. I'm good with that. Did you used to carry the tape recorder around?
I did, but I never listened to it either. I just went by memory of like what worked, and if something really worked well, I always remembered it. And I didn't do a lot of ad lib, and I didn't do a lot of talking to the audience. So I kind of always try to create sets. I did practice all the time, and I tried to create the sets, and I would listen to it, but not religiously. Like right now, most of the younger comics I see, they're all taping this. You know, they got on their phones. I think it's very helpful. I mean, personally, I know it's helpful to weed out words, especially when you're trying to get a 5-minute bit, you know, for TV or something, you know, to weed out extra words and things. And it is helpful, but I just didn't do it in the formative years.
Okay. So it was like a regular thing that we did. We'd have our notebook with us. We'd have our back in the day, excuse me, it was a Walkman, like a cassette, player Walkman. And you know, you'd sort of look around for where to put it before you went on. I might have told you this story before, but so one night at the Improv in Hollywood, there was a, just as you came through the door into the showroom, there was like a big stack of electronic equipment, you know, the sound stuff. And there was like a, it was encased in a wooden shelf thing. And we were forever being told not to put our stuff up there, but everybody put their stuff up there. And so Jimmy Brogan and I were standing, and we were also always being told not to stand just inside the doorway because it blocked people. But we were standing just inside the doorway, and we were watching a comic on stage. And I like to think that I'm not always like this, but on that particular night, I guess I was a little critical of the performer on stage. I forget. I don't remember who it was. I'm sure by now they're the executive, producer of Abbott Elementary or something. But yeah, I'm watching this guy on stage, and I felt he was a bit of a hack. And I said something to that effect, I'm sure. To my friend Jimmy Brogan. And Jimmy Brogan, being the nicest guy in the world, by the way, would never say anything bad about anybody. I always felt like the Wicked Witch when I stood near Jimmy Brogan because the contrast was so severe. I think I said like, it's kind of generic what that guy's doing, or, that guy's kind of a hack, or whatever I said. And Brogan notices that this guy's tape recorder is on top of the equipment that we're leaning right over.
Yeah.
And you can see the red button on that says it's recording. And now I'm like, oh, shit, totally busted. Right? Because I would never tell that person that I said that. And so right. we're trying to figure out what to do. So we pick up the tape recorder and we push stop and we rewind and push play again. Another thing that we used to really enjoy doing was taking somebody's notebook while they were on stage. Because usually all of us, we carried these notebooks and we would write, if you had an idea for something, like you mm-hmm. might write just one or two words, you know, to explain what it was. Like you might just write yeah. like, you know, I don't know, like slippers or golden yeah, sneakers.
Yeah. Set list.
Right, right. Right. Just enough, you know, like the performer knew what it meant, but nobody else knew what it meant, right? So we all delighted in opening one another's notebooks and writing down words in it so that when the guy came back and looked at his notebook, he'd be like, what the hell was that thing that I did? you know, I often just wrote nipples. That's why there was a big flood of middle acts for years doing nipple jokes, because I kept right. writing that into their books.
Right. So, Paula, I want to ask you, we got a couple of minutes left. You're touring all over the place. People can get the podcast at paulapoundstone.com. You just started a Patreon page, which is great.
By the way,
you got all kinds of videos up there, merchandise. The website looks like it's been upgraded since we talked before. You said, by the way, yeah?
Well, you know, the Patreon thing, which is a way that people can support, you know, a performer, or in our case, mm-hmm. it's our website. We give additional content. We record longer and we do stuff for the Patreon participants or contributors, however you want to say it. But the word, you know, Beethoven used to have patrons that, you know, gave to the arts and supported him, and he lived in their house. And then
wow.
in the evening, he would come play music for them. And my point is that if you're just paying like $7 a month for to be supportive by joining our Patreon for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, or to get that additional content, you know, just like longer shows and some, what do we call them? We have like chat room nights and stuff like right. that, and other things to come. But if you're just doing that for like $7 a month, that is so much easier and better for you than having us come live in your house. That's all I'm saying. You're getting off easy.
That's right. The migrants need that space in your house.
Yes.
There's no room for Paula.
It's a deal. It's an absolute deal.
Paula, great to see you again. Thanks so much for joining us. Folks, again, this is very important. April 19th. Town Hall, New York City, Manhattan. It doesn't get bigger or better than Town Hall. And Paula Poundstone certainly deserves to be there. Is this your first time there?
Oh, no, I've been there a couple times, but it's been a long time.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that my fantasy of taking New York by storm is really playing out the way I had thought of it.
But listen, how many does it hold, Town Hall?
I don't know, but fewer than live there.
Yeah.
Percentage wise.
Couple of thousand anyway, isn't it?
Percentage wise, I'm not asking a lot.
Right.
I would just like them to open up the balcony. That's all I'm asking.
Right. Right. Well, hopefully, ideally, Kathy and I will be down there to see you, because we love you and we thank you so much for doing the show and all the great work that you're doing. And listen, this, as the campaign season heats up, let's get together and do some more. Some more fundraisers.
I love help that idea.
How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds
Donnie
great.
Frank, he moved the suitcase. He's ready.
He is.
He's got a new set.
He's got a ballet bar in there. It's a whole performance space now.
All right, Paula, good to see you. PaulaPoundstone.com, everybody. Thanks, Paula.
Take care, Tingle. I love you.
Love you back. Bye-bye.